Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and you're listening to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. Welcome. My aim is to bring you down-to-earth, conversational episodes that help you develop a deeper understanding of how your body's changing in your 40s, and most importantly, how you can support yourself throughout this wonderful transitional phase of your life. Join me for my solo episodes and also episodes with guests for fun, fresh, truthful chat on all things health and happiness in your 40s. And now onto the episode. Hi, and welcome back to another episode of the podcast this week with your host, Francesca. So today I wanted to talk about low estrogen, what it looks like, how it feels, and why it matters so much for women, not just in perimenopause, and not just necessarily something that we would experience, you know, as we move into menopause, but any stage of life. So we're sort of just talking about low estrogen generally today. But of course, we'll be tying in the perimenopause side as well as we go through, because estrogen is one of the most powerful hormones in the female body. We actually have three main types. We've got estradiol, estrone, and estriol. But the one that I'm focusing on today is estradiol. This is also sometimes known as E2. This is the one that whenever we are talking about estrogen, whenever you know, a health professional or a doctor talks about estrogen and testing levels and so on, it's the estradiol type. That's the most active one. It's the most potent from during our menstrual cycling years, you know, all the way from basically that our first period as a teen right up to menopause. That's the one that we're producing by our from our ovaries, and it's potent and active, and it does all the jobs that we talk about when we talk about estrogen. So it's estradiol is made primarily in the ovaries, but what's really incredible is that we have estrogen receptors in every single cell of the body, including our brain, our bones, our muscles, our heart, our skin, our eyes, and even our blood vessels. So that's how wide-reaching its effects are. And that's why it impacts so much. It's this systemic impact when we lose it, when it's erratic in perimenopause, when it's declining, and then, you know, when it's gone at menopause. So in the brain, for example, estrogen doesn't just influence our mood. So we tend to talk about estrogen and hormones in terms of sort of mood control. But in the brain, it actually acts like a neurotransmitter, a brain chemical. So we have estrogen receptors in the hypothalamus, which is the part of the brain that regulates our internal thermostat. And so that's why hot flushes and night sweats can become really common when estrogen levels drop. So whether that's when they've dropped consistently at menopause and postmenopause, or whether they're dropping as part of the perimenopausal roller coaster when we get the highs and the lows, or like I said, at any time in our life, we have, you know, we can have younger women in their 20s and earlier 30s who are experiencing hot flushes and night sweats because maybe they have genuinely sort of consistently low levels of estrogen. And we'll talk about why that might be in a minute. So yeah, it doesn't just influence our mood in the brain or cognition. We do know that it supports cognition, memory, you know, anti-brain fog, but it's also regulating that internal thermostat. So it's basically part of, it is, you know, what makes up our body temperature control. And something that's even more fascinating when it comes to the brain is that brain plasticity changes throughout the menstrual cycle in response to estrogen. So scientists have actually done brain studies where they've done daily blood tests and brain scans over a full menstrual cycle in women, showing that the volume of the brain literally changes in sync with hormonal levels. So when estrogen is higher in the cycle at different various points, so for example, during ovulation, in the lead up to ovulation, we get a surge, you know, in a normal menstrual cycle, we get a surge in estrogen just before ovulation, while the body is trying to ovulate. And then we get a little bit of a spike again in halfway through the luteal phase. So what this study found is that at those points when estrogen was high, they saw increased connectivity and growth of brain cells in those brain scans in those women. And then when it dropped, there was measurable shrinkage on those brain scans. So it's just proof of how vital estrogen is to brain health and brain function. Now, when the brain stimulates the ovaries to make estrogen, because just to back up a little bit, the way that our ovaries are controlled basically in making estrogen and progesterone is by what's known as the HPO axis, the hypothalamus pituitary, that's in the brain, and the O stands for the ovaries, so the brain to ovary communication link, basically, axis. It's the brain talking down, you know, communicating down to those ovaries, releasing certain hormones, FSH, for example, LH, and these communications down to the ovaries to make them make estrogen, to make them ovulate. And as a result of ovulating, that's how we make progesterone and so on. So when the brain stimulates the ovaries to make estrogen, that estrogen is then used by the cells all throughout the body. It supports, as I said, you know, bone density. So it's all these different areas. So for example, bone density. So low estrogen increases the risk of osteoporosis. So I've just mentioned the brain link, proof of just how vital estrogen is to brain health and brain function. And I've just mentioned that when we have low, because it's so supportive of bone density, that's why low estrogen increases the risk of osteoporosis. And then we also have the fact that estrogen helps to keep our blood vessels elastic and flexible, so that low, so, you know, that basically supports heart health. So again, low estrogen raises cardiovascular risk. So just to make the point there, that these are the three big low estrogen health risks: brain, bone, and heart. So brain health, memory, osteoporosis, and heart health, cardiovascular health. So those are the three big ones. When we lose estrogen, if we have low estrogen at any age, when we are postmenopausal, and those are the three main sort of health reasons. If we look outside of symptom control of low estrogen, those are the three health reasons why a person may choose to replace their estrogen, either during perimenopause when it's already getting lower, or waiting until menopause itself. You know, that's why a person may choose to put that transdermal body identical estrogen in, so that they can support those three big areas of health. So that's just a kind of side note. So estrogen then plays a role in hair growth as well, collagen production. So it's important for skin health. And also just not just skin on our, you know, skin that we see, but sort of the lining of the tissue lining of various, you know, lungs, for example, the vaginal lining, vaginal tissue lining. It's important for joint health. It's important for helping us to build muscle mass. It's important for encouraging insulin sensitive cells, which I've talked about so many times before, but that's you know, another topic. It's important for hearing, eyesight, libido, and also short and long-term memory. So when estrogen levels start to fall, whether that's in perimenopause, postmenopause, or after a person stops the pill, or whilst they're on the pill, because we're not making any of our estrogen when we're on the pill, or even in younger women who aren't on the pill, but they have what's known as hypothalamic or ovarian issues, where they're not, basically that brain to ovary communication I just mentioned isn't working as well as it should, then, you know, that communication link just isn't as robust. And we see younger women have issues with ovarian production of estrogen and progesterone. And when that happens, we see a wide range of symptoms. So some of the common signs of low estrogen, which, you know, you'll know all of these from sort of all the talk about menopause and perimenopause. But again, just to think of this in the context of any age, any stage. So some of the most common ones: hot flushes and night sweats, obviously, palpitations, heart flutters, thinning hair, dry skin, vaginal dryness or painful sex, urinary incontinence, increased urgency, depression, anxiety, low mood, memory issues. Did I say that already? Low libido, but also not just low sex drive, but low libido for life itself. No sort of like a loss of joy or motivation for, you know, enjoying a life. Fatigue, low motivation generally, muscle and joint aches or stiffness, obviously weakening of bones, brain fog. Yeah, forgetfulness, difficulty concentrating. So, of course, a lot of these symptoms, you know, brain fog, forgetfulness, difficulty concentrating, even muscle and joint aches and pains, palpitations, heart flutters, thinning hair, dry skin. These can be due to other things as well. You know, thyroid, low thyroid, overactive, underactive thyroid can cause these things. Stress, blood sugar imbalances, as well, depression, anxiety, low mood. Of course, these things can be caused by, they can be driven by a lot of other things. There could be a few different things going on at once, but these are just, you know, I'm just sort of outlining that they can also be linked to low estrogen. Now, a quick caveat here is that in the early stages of perimenopause, estrogen is often still robust and, you know, for many women. So again, we tend to think of, I think, unfortunately, there's still a lot of people that tend to think of perimenopause as a time when they're nearing menopause and estrogen is low. But, you know, we know that perimenopause is a biological phase that we're moving into from mid to late 30s. And we can have, even in our early 40s and even up to mid 40s or beyond, estrogen can still be quite robust for many women. It doesn't necessarily start its decline until later. In fact, sometimes it can be even higher than it's ever been before in those earlier stages of perimenopause. But because perimenopause is such a hormonally erratic time, and you can still you're basically going to still experience sudden estrogen dips as part of that erratic nature, as part of its roller coaster. And it's those drops are what trigger these low estrogen symptoms, even when your overall levels aren't consistently low. So we can have women early 40s suffering with hot flushes, night sweats, brain, you know, memory issues, and they're saying, oh, I must have low estrogen, I must be menopausal. But it can just be that they still have robust levels of estrogen, normal, healthy levels, but they're experiencing these drops, which are bringing, sort of triggering these low estrogen symptoms at that time. So I do talk about this a lot, because the real goal in perimenopause is to support the roller coaster. You know, we don't necessarily want to support low estrogen, because if estrogen isn't low overall, and it's the sharp drops in the roller coaster that are creating the symptoms, what we really want to be doing is supporting the roller coaster. We want to be smoothing out those ups and downs so that the drops aren't so sharp and they don't hit your nervous system quite so hard and therefore cause those sorts of symptoms. And, you know, I talk about that a lot in various episodes. We're really looking at sort of stress management, blood sugar management, nutrients. You know, there's so many different lifestyle and dietary ways that we can be supporting that. And I talk about that on plenty of previous episodes and in my blog, in my membership. Of course, that's what one of the foundational pieces of my work with clients is, supporting them to smooth out those ups and downs of the roller coaster. And that's been my journey. You know, I'm nearly 46 now, in a couple of weeks. And the way that I've managed my perimenopause experience so far is exactly that, to be keeping an eye on how severe kind of my estrogen highs, my estrogen lows symptoms might be, and really using that as feedback that I need to be working on smoothing that out. So for today's episode, though, I'm talking more about true low overall estrogen, not just the temporary dips that happen during perimenopause. So let's dive in. It's not just midlife women that are affected by low estrogen, which hopefully now you know, I've said that before. I see younger women with it too, often those who have been on the pill long term. So obviously they've been on the pill, they've been experiencing symptoms that essentially mimic menopause, fatigue, depression, low libido, dry skin, painful sex, or even early bone density loss if they're tracking that or if they have symptoms of it. And that's because the pill literally switches off that brain to ovary communication, that HPO axis. It switches it off. That's the whole idea of the medication. I was on the pill from, I think, age 18 to about 25, 26. And, you know, it's really common that a lot of us teenagers were put on the pill if we had very heavy periods, or maybe we wanted it for contraception. Either way, it's really common that a lot of us do have a history of having been on the pill. But that's what's going on when we're on the pill. It switches off your natural hormone rhythm, meaning you're not getting that beautiful cyclical production of estrogen throughout the cycle, and then progesterone during that after ovulation that your body depends on for so many of its vital functions. And the way we sort of look at the menstrual cycle is that the more exposure, you know, a woman's body has to that natural hormonal rhythm over time, the more we're sort of adding to that health bank balance, both now, but also for protecting us in the future. You know, the more time we spend where we're having natural productions of estrogen, for example, that's adding to the bone density bank balance, for example, you know, over time. And estrogen really is a whole body hormone. It's protective, restorative, and it's really important for physical and mental health, well-being. So when it's low, the ripple effects are felt everywhere. So now that we've covered what estrogen does and how low levels can show up in the body, let's talk about why estrogen might be low in the first place. So the first and most common reason is, of course, perimenopause, the transition years leading us up to menopause, when the ovaries gradually become less and less responsive to the brain's signaling. So during the later stages of perimenopause, that's going to be getting more and more so that the brain is responding, that the ovaries are responding less and less, and therefore ovulation starting to become less and less consistent. So we're making less and less progesterone. And because estrogen is made by the developing follicles in the ovaries, that also means that our estrogen production becomes erratic and then less and less over time until we eventually get to menopause and we stop making it. You might get cycles during perimenopause where estrogen surges, as I said, like higher than ever before, higher than normal. And that would lead to symptoms like breast tenderness, breast pain, heavy periods, mood swings, even rage for some women. And yeah, when your period comes, super heavy, clotty, and that can be followed by cycles where it dips very low, causing hot flushes, a drop in mood, insomnia, anxiety, irritability, heart palpitations. It's this roller coaster effect that makes perimenopause such a challenging time for us, because we are just naturally going to have these highs and lows and highs and lows for, you know, for some women, many, many years. But like I said, we can work on tapering, if that's the right word, smoothing out those highs and lows. There's a lot we can be doing nutritionally and lifestyle wise to do that. So we've got this roller coaster. Eventually, as we approach menopause, ovulation completely stops now, and estrogen levels just remain consistently low for essentially the rest of our lives. That's a natural process. But how smoothly we move through it often depends on our overall health, stress levels, nutritional status, blood sugar, all of these different things. So, you know, this is all the natural phases of womanhood where estrogen is up and down and then it's gone. And like I said, we may choose to put estrogen hormone therapy and progesterone hormone therapy, maybe later stages of perimenopause or postmenopause. But that's obviously a different conversation. Now, there's also other reasons why estrogen can fall outside of perimenopause and menopause. So let's have a look at those. And these do still apply to perimenopause, because these are reasons why we may have experienced low levels at any age, but during perimenopause, they're also reasons why those lows are going to be lower. You know, those drops are going to be even sharper. So take note of everything I'm sort of going to go through now as to reasons why we can have low levels of estrogen. These are also reasons why we can have that real sharp drop in estrogen in perimenopause, and maybe a quicker fall as well. In some women, for example, don't start to have lower levels of estrogen until really late in perimenopause. So for example, I know somebody who is 49 and she still has very robust levels of estrogen, versus somebody who I know, someone who's 45 and they have had low, they've been dealing with like consistently low levels of estrogen since for about 2 or 3 years. And for them, they would want to take heed of all of these things I'm going to go through now, because they're kind of exacerbating the issue with these particular things that we're going to talk through now. So stress is a big one. This is one of the biggest, if not the biggest reason. When we're under chronic stress, the body prioritizes survival over reproduction. So when the brain senses any stress, the brain is not interested in helping us to continue to have these normal, lovely menstrual cycles and ovulate. What if we get pregnant from the ovulation? And it's dangerous. It's a dangerous time to fall pregnant. As far as the brain's concerned, if it senses that we're chronically stressed, we're obviously in survival. It's also, according to the brain, a time when you're trying to survive. We're not going to be turning on menstrual cycles and ovulation, because the brain senses danger. So it's reducing the hormonal signals that stimulate the ovaries, which means less estrogen is made, and obviously no progesterone because we don't ovulate. But what's really interesting is that some of our estrogen is actually made in the adrenal glands. So those are the same glands, the two tiny little glands that produce cortisol, the main stress hormone, and adrenaline. So when we're constantly in fight or flight mode and we're constantly releasing stress hormones to help survive, to help us to fight or flee. Those adrenal glands are focused on keeping us alive. They're not focused on making the little bit of estrogen that they can make. So again, just another way that we can make a very small amount of estrogen, not quite the same as the active potent one that we use in the body, but still helpful. We're sort of also blunting that as well, that ability to make that little bit of estrogen we can make there. So in other words, the more pressure that your body's under, the less capacity it has to produce estrogen. And over time, that can contribute to the symptoms like fatigue, low mood, low libido, hot flushes, night sweats, irritability, anxiety, heart palpitations, brain fog, memory issues, especially in perimenopause when your ovaries are already slowing down and your adrenals are supposed to help pick up some of that slack. So supporting your stress response through rest, relaxation, nervous system regulation, and good nutrition, that can make a really big difference to how much estrogen your body's able to produce effectively. Okay, so undereating or low body fat is another common cause. This is a really, really big one. I see this all the time. Women just not eating enough food. I think my previous episode was this or the one before, I can't remember. We need enough energy and dietary fat coming into the body in order for us to make hormones, including estrogen. So even if we're not stressed, so we're not switching off that brain to ovary communication because we're not stressed and we're very happy and everything's okay. If we don't have enough energy, so essentially calories coming in from our food and from good food, you know, nourishing, dietary, good fats, proteins, quality carbohydrates, we're not providing enough of the literally raw materials to make our hormones. So estrogen, for example, will rely on different types of fats, including cholesterol, coming in from our diet in order to be able to make these hormones. So if we're skipping meals, if we're restricting calories, if we're fasting for too long, or, you know, maybe we're skipping breakfast and we're fasting until 11, 12 o'clock during the day, or we're doing 24-hour fasts, we're over-exercising, so exercising just too heavily without fueling properly, then your body can enter a kind of energy-saving mode, suppressing ovulation and then lowering estrogen as a result. So this is something I often see in women who are health conscious, but they're undernourished. So that's what I talked about in my previous episode, is that we feel there's plenty of women out there that think they're eating clean or, you know, I eat really well. And then I said, well, what do you mean by eat really well? And they'll say, oh, I have a green juice for breakfast, or I don't eat breakfast. I skip breakfast and have my first meal at 11. And I have, you know, some greens and a bit of chicken. And then for dinner, I have a meat or fish with some vegetables. Or I just have a bowl of porridge for breakfast with some nuts and some berries. These are, you know, on paper, these are healthy, let's say clean foods. But there's not enough nourishment. There's not enough nutrition and energy and fuel coming in from that diet at all in order to fuel this person and, you know, really nourish that HPO axis. So the other thing I see is over-exercising. So especially, you know, that's relative from person to person. There's no one like set number of times or types of exercises through the week that you can say that's over-exercising, that's not, that's good. It depends on the person. It's relative to the person. I may be able to do 4 good quality strength training sessions per week, and I'm fueling really well, I'm resting really well, I'm managing my stress really well, you know, everything's cool, then that's going to work absolutely fine for me versus somebody who is under fueling, very, very stressed, possibly suffering with some sort of long-term fatigue issues or energy deficiency issues. And for them, those 4 times a week would be over-exercising for that particular person's physiology at that time. So it's relative to the person. But what I'm talking about here is particularly long, intense cardio or endurance sessions that basically can have the same impact on the adrenal glands as everyday stressors. The body reads these kind of long, intense cardio sessions or, you know, HIIT sessions that are so-called HIIT. It's not really high intensity interval training if you're training for longer than, say, 15 minutes. So if you're doing these kind of F45 or boot camp style classes, you know, they're like 45, 60 minutes. That is your body. Your brain is reading that as physical stress. And again, it downregulates your reproductive hormones. It downregulates, it basically prevents ovulation. Thyroid issues can also affect estrogen levels. So when thyroid function is low, then your metabolism slows and the liver, which helps metabolize and recycle estrogen, doesn't work as efficiently. It just can't, you know, lots of our processes are slowed. And that can lead to imbalances in both directions. So sometimes estrogen dominance, this is an annoying term because it's not actually accurate. And a lot of people get it wrong. Basically, they interpret it wrong. But it can lead to imbalances in, what I mean by saying that is that it can lead to a situation where estrogen is the dominating hormone throughout the whole cycle when it shouldn't be. It should only dominate in the first half of the cycle. In the second half of the cycle, we want to make progesterone, which is made as a result of ovulation. If we don't ovulate, we don't make progesterone, and therefore we have estrogen dominating the entire cycle. So it's relative to that second half of the cycle when estrogen should be balanced out by progesterone. And that creates various symptoms, like I mentioned earlier, from sort of having higher levels of estrogen, even though you don't necessarily have high levels. But if it's not balanced out relative to progesterone, we'll get the heavy painful periods, the clots, the breast pain, the mood issues, and horrible sort of PMS-y, more PMS symptoms in the lead up to our period. So that's what I mean by estrogen dominance. But often in perimenopause, and hypothyroid states, when we have underactive thyroid, we can have this, you know, it's more likely that we're going to experience this sort of situation where we're not making any progesterone to help balance it out. And we have this domination of estrogen throughout the cycle. And also, finally, other reasons could be certain medications. So especially hormonal contraceptive, the oral contraceptive pill, because that suppresses natural estrogen production entirely. We are not making, like I said, the brain is, it's all switched off. The brain to ovary link is off. So we're not making any of our real hormones at all. So the pill is essentially switching off your own cycle. It's replacing your body's natural hormones with synthetic versions that don't offer the same benefits for the brain, the bones, the cardiovascular system. And the same can happen when we come off the pill. So it can take anywhere between 3, 9, 12 months for the brain to ovary communication to fully restart. So when I'm working with women who, or girls, or, you know, younger women who have just come off the pill, maybe they've been 2, 3 months off the pill and they're saying, oh, I've got loads of acne and thinning hair, rage, you know, breast pain. I just feel all over the place. I feel like my hormones are just all over the place. And it's their body, their brain to ovary communication is still trying to come back online. It can take, like I said, 3, 6, 9, 12 months for that brain to ovary communication to fully restart. So we need to be patient and provide, in that meantime, provide lots of nourishment, you know, eating 3 well-balanced meals each day, plenty of good fats, plenty of energy coming in from our food to help put that brain to ovary communication back online. Other possible contributing issues are fast weight loss. So anyone that does a low calorie diet or other kind of extreme weight loss measures, including, like I said, fasting, all of the, you know, when we're just losing weight quickly, we're losing lots of water and muscle and a little bit of body fat, but those kind of things will, that kind of situation can contribute, because again, the brain sees that as a stressor. Nutrient deficiencies, particularly B vitamins, folate, B12, B6, zinc, magnesium, selenium, all the healthy fats as well, including cholesterol, even saturated fats, that can all create issues where we don't have the raw materials we need to make those hormones, and even overexposure to environmental toxins that can disrupt hormone signaling. So that's your endocrine disrupting chemicals. And I've got episodes on that as well. So I'll link to those in the show notes. So if you're noticing some of these symptoms that we've talked about, from low mood to joint pain to loss of libido, it's worth asking not just what's happening, but why. Is it a natural stage of life? So are you late stages of perimenopause? Are you experiencing the erratic nature of it? Are you menopause? Or is your body understressed, undernourished, or out of sync? Or is it everything? Most of the time, women in perimenopause are understressed, undernourished, out of sync. So it's a double whammy. So we really need to be considering what applies to me of the things that I just talked about. What could you start to consider maybe applicable to you in your life that you could start to work on? Because that's what's great is that in many cases, there's so much you can do to support your body to bring these hormones back into balance. Even when you're in perimenopause, perimenopause is in hormonal imbalance, but there's so much we can do to support the erratic nature of estrogen, the declining progesterone. We can support these situations to prevent how much progesterone declines and keep the body making it for as long as possible, longer than it would if you hadn't intervened. And we can, like I said, smooth out the roller coaster. So the highs and lows of estrogen are not as intense and we don't experience the symptoms as intensely. So let's talk about what you can do to support your body in maintaining healthy estrogen levels, whether you're in perimenopause or simply feeling the effects of low estrogen at any stage, any age, from stress, undereating, or coming off hormonal contraception, or it's a bit of both. Like I said, all of those things, plus you're in perimenopause, for example. Now, the goal here isn't necessarily to chase more estrogen. You know, if we know it's low, let's chase more. It's not about that. It's to support your body's natural rhythm and help it produce the estrogen that's not producing, metabolize, break it down healthily, and utilize the estrogen it does have in the healthiest way possible. So let's start with nutrition, because what and how you eat can make a huge difference. So we want to nourish our body with enough calories, including from healthy fats. So as I said in the previous episode, I'm going to link it in the show notes, I talk about the fact that so many women are still very much underfueling, unknowingly for the most part. They think they're eating these three healthy meals, and whilst on paper they look and sound healthy, they just don't have enough calories. They don't have enough energy coming in. There's not enough healthy fats. There's not enough protein. And so they are just missing, the body is missing the raw materials it needs. Cholesterol is actually the building block of all of our steroid hormones, and that includes estrogen. So if your diet's too low in fat, too low in food generally, your body simply doesn't have those raw materials to make estrogen and your other hormones. So we want to include foods like avocado, extra virgin olive oil, nuts, seeds, oily fish, so salmon, mackerel, herring, sardines, trout, and good quality eggs to give your body the fuel it needs. Protein is also really important, of course. I talk about protein all the time. It's like the key nutrient. It provides the amino acids. So protein foods break down into different amino acids that are literally the raw materials, again, for hormone production. They're also the raw materials for muscle repair, for liver detoxification pathways, which is where the body breaks down appropriately, hopefully, it's used estrogen. Whether it's low or not, we still need to be doing that really well. So try to include a good source of protein with every meal, whether that's fish, chicken, eggs, lentils, tofu, tempeh, good quality beef, lamb, and so on. Fiber and phytoestrogens are really, really helpful. So these are found in foods like the phytoestrogens are found in foods like flax seeds, soy, fermented soy, so tofu or tempeh. When you're having flax seeds, you want to make sure you're grinding them. So you can just buy the whole ones, but you want to be grinding them in like a coffee grinder or the NutriBullet or another smoothie, another blender where you've got the different part that you use for grinding, and then have about a tablespoon a day or two. Chickpeas, lentils, these are all great sources of fiber. They do have some phytoestrogen effects as well. But really put together, these just fantastic sources of fiber that help to sort of bind our broken down estrogen in the stool and get it out of the body, which is how we effectively and efficiently break down our used estrogen, which, like I said, is something we need to be able to do well, even if it's low. But the phytoestrogen impact is that, so phytoestrogens are basically plant compounds that bind to estrogen receptors in the cells and have a gentle balancing effect. They don't boost estrogen. They do not increase estrogen in the body, and they do not remove estrogen from the body, like lower levels, but they basically have a more sort of balancing adaptive adaptation effect, which can be really helpful for modulating symptoms of low estrogen. Because obviously nothing can give us more estrogen in the body other than the hormone itself. So even when you hear people talking about various herbs that can help to boost estrogen, there is no such thing. So things like black cohosh, sage, for example, and the phytoestrogens, these are fantastic ways to sort of modulate, the kind of balance out the sort of more of a balancing effect on estrogen, but it does not increase estrogen in the body. Nothing can do that other than the hormone itself, the one that we make in the body internally, or the one that we might take transdermally, for example, as part of hormone therapy. But these things are fantastic for smoothing out those highs and lows in perimenopause, And also if we're dealing with just low estrogen overall and we've got those low estrogen symptoms, these herbs and the phytoestrogens can be really helpful, as I said, to alleviate those symptoms. Liver and gut health are key for hormonal balance as well. And I've talked about this. I've got previous episodes on liver detoxification for healthy estrogen levels, for gut health, and how much that plays into hormone health. But once your body has used estrogen, it basically needs to be broken down and eliminated. This is also known as estrogen metabolism, which I mentioned a moment ago. And that process mainly happens through the liver. And then the final stage of clearing out estrogen from the body permanently is in the gut. So once the liver's done its jobs, it's got quite a complex process that it puts your used molecules of estrogen through in the liver, it then gets sent, packaged up and sent into the gut where it would be passed out permanently via bowel movement. Now, first of all, if your liver is overloaded with, say, alcohol, too much caffeine, sugar, environmental toxins, drugs, even medications, or if your gut health isn't optimal and you're not having a fully formed bowel movement every single day, and maybe the gut bacteria balance isn't optimal, then that old used estrogen can linger, can kind of remain in circulation rather than getting out of the body. And that can then lead to imbalances. So we really want to be supporting our liver with things like plenty of cruciferous vegetables. This is such an easy win that we can just start to implement every day. So things like broccoli, cauliflower, kale, rocket, watercress, pak choy. And these are great vegetables to be including every day, as well as Brussels sprouts now that we're coming into the winter. These contain compounds, a few different compounds, that help to detoxify excess hormones, they help to detoxify estrogen, basically. They help the liver's pathways of estrogen metabolism, which is really, really important for overall estrogen balance. And then we want to be aiming for those regular bowel movements every day so that those hormones can actually leave the body once they've been metabolized. So these cruciferous vegetables, they contain these important compounds like DIM, I3C, sulforaphane, that support the liver's detoxification processes, but then they also support the regular bowel movements because they're such wonderful forms of fiber. The best forms of fiber come from vegetables, all the different colors, types, dark green leafy veg, all of those. Strength training is really important to protect bones and muscles. So, you know, low estrogen is going to, as I said earlier, it's going to impact bone strength, bone health. It's going to increase our risk of osteoporosis. So, for example, if we're in our, you know, if we're 20s and 30s and we're on the pill, for example, that's, again, this is something I did not know when I was on the pill from age 18, which is way back in 1998, for nearly 8 years. I didn't know. I had no idea. No one told me. No one told my mum. We didn't know that where I was obviously blocking my hormone production via the pill, I wasn't making my own estrogen. So that's going to have in some way would have impacted my bone health. Obviously, I'm never going to know that. But anyway, regardless of what stage you're at, we want to be strength training because that's going to help to increase muscle mass, protect our bones and strengthen our bones and prevent osteoporosis. And actually research into strength training has actually shown that even just 2 30-minute sessions a week for women was found to be beneficial. So I think we can all find a way to fit that in. And obviously, if we can get to 3 sessions or if we're even able to do 4, great. But if the research is showing that 2 was beneficial, then that's great. And it's definitely a starting point. And then let's get back to stress management, because this one can't be overstated. So remember I said that your adrenal glands, they help to produce estrogen once the ovarian production starts to decline. So later stages of perimenopause and postmenopause, your adrenal glands will pick up the slack, but only if they're not constantly pumping out cortisol. So if they're constantly being asked to pump out your stress hormones, they're not going to be able to do the other jobs like make some estrogen. But this is where, and this isn't the only reason, but it, you know, we want to be supporting our stress, but it's a big reason. So this is where restorative practices really make a difference. Even when we're at a time where we can ovarianly produce estrogen, I find that a lot of women can be low estrogen due to stress, because it's not only the fact that the adrenal glands aren't making their hormones, but if we are overstressed and those adrenal glands are under pressure, it will also impact that HPO axis I mentioned. So the brain to ovarian communication. And therefore, if, you know, if the ovaries are just not getting, again, the signals they need, we're not going to be making as much hormone as we would normally. without all of that stress. So this is where restorative practices really make a difference. So simple, consistent habits like breathing exercises, even just the 4-6 breathing. One of my clients I spoke to this morning she came to me first with sleep issues and a few other things. But one of the first successes that she's had within a couple of weeks, simply by implementing the 4-6 breathing for a few minutes before she gets, like while she lies in bed at night, and then because she was struggling with waking, nighttime waking. So now she lies there, she tells herself it doesn't matter, and she takes the 4-6 breathing for about 3 or 4 minutes, she finds herself just dropping off to sleep. So overall, that's had a huge impact on how she feels, because she's just falling back to sleep. So yeah, something simple like the 4-6 breathing, gentle yoga. If we can dip into yoga throughout the week, even just sort of 10-20 minute sessions, spending as much time as possible in nature, journaling, you know, writing down things that are bothering us, things we're trying to work through. I always find if I have a good old pen to paper for a page or two, by the end of it, I've answered my own question. If I had a decision to make, or I was struggling over something, or I couldn't quite process something, I just write it down and it all sort of starts to make sense. And that takes a lot of pressure off, you know, and just thinking of what you're grateful for, like every single day, what is it on this particular day? What is it in general that I'm grateful for? It's very difficult. It's impossible, in fact, to be stressed, feel negative about life in times when we're sort of asking ourselves to remember what's positive. Even just creating quiet moments in your day, 3 minutes, 4 minutes here or there. Sometimes I'll just take a cup of tea out onto our terrace, don't bring my phone, and I just stand there and I just drink my tea and I look out into the horizon or just look at the view. Even just little pockets of time like that throughout the day help to calm the nervous system and take pressure off the adrenals. And it's not just about relaxation. It's also about building safety and consistency into your routine. So safety meaning that the brain starts to pick up on the fact that actually this person isn't stressed. They don't need to be in fight flight all the time. I can tone it down. You know, I can allow them to be in rest and digest, the opposite of fight flight. So regular meals full of protein, healthy fats and fiber, good sleep routine. So, you know, evening routine, nice, lovely wind down routine, dim the lights, get off your screens at least an hour before bed. Get daylight exposure within 30 minutes of waking, get as much daylight exposure then throughout the day that you can, in any ways that you can, little pockets here and there, and downtime. These all signal your body to your brain that it's safe, which allows it to shift out of stress mode and back into hormone, you know, happiness mode. Hydration and movement. So hydration, really, really overlooked. Water flushes out hormone metabolites. So once we've broken down our hormones in the liver, they need to be flushed out, and water is going to help to get rid of toxins, hormones. Hydration is really underrated. And of course, I've mentioned strength training, but other movement, you know, how often can you just make sure you're getting up if you have a desk job, that you're standing up at least every hour, doing a tiny bit of movement, even if it's just a little walk around the desk, a walk from one room to the other, a walk up and down a set of stairs, some stretching if you're working from home. Have a mat next to your desk like I do if you have the space, and just get down and do some stretches, a downward dog, you know, whatever it might be, and then sit back down again. If you do that multiple times through the day, that works out to be a lot of movement at the end of the day that wouldn't be getting otherwise. And just try and get out for walks as much as possible. You know, anytime you can take the stairs or just go take walk instead of bus or train or car, whatever it might be, then do that. Of course, it's also about self-awareness. So start tuning into your body's feedback. What is your energy trying to tell you? What is your sleep trying to tell you? Your menstrual cycle, your PMS, your mood, your periods, what are they trying to tell you? Now that we've been through a few things here, hopefully you have more of an understanding. All of these give you clues about how your hormones are responding to your lifestyle. So for example, I get really tired. This is just a small example. I get really tired around on a work day, sort of around 3 or 4 o'clock, and I could just fall asleep, just go to sleep, and I'm sort of done. And I know that that's my body telling me you're not really pacing yourself properly from the morning onwards, and you're just sort of go, go, go. You need to take a little bit more, you know, space to just get outside, go for a walk, maybe do some breathing techniques in the morning, or have a 5-minute break here or there before you get to lunch. where you're doing the 4-6 breathing. And then by 3 o'clock, I'm usually not feeling that way if I do those things. So everything is feedback. Take it as feedback. Allow it. That's also really important, is where we allow these symptoms rather than want to fight them. Why is this here? Oh my God, this is horrible. Sort of say, okay, hello. Hello, symptom, whatever you are. You're allowed to be here because you're here because you're telling me something. You're here for information purposes. And I'm, you know, I'm going to consider what that might be. So welcome. But let it, you know, also just let it go. And not, rather than sort of stressing over it, think, what is it trying to tell me? What tiny little things could I do? One thing, two things, whatever it might be, to support myself. So what I want you to take away from today's episode is that low estrogen can be managed. It's workable. Still, there's plenty we can do with nutrition and lifestyle to manage symptoms, whether it's perimenopause, postmenopause, or another reason your levels have dipped. There's so many ways we can support our body through it. One of the things I do with, a lot with my clients, is I run the Dutch test, which really helps me get a good look at not just estrogen, but the other hormones and where other imbalances I can pick up on. We're looking at hormone production, but also we're looking at adrenal health. So we're looking at the stress, how stress might be having an impact on that person. We really get a lot of information about stress. It's a fantastic sort of stress test, but it's also looking at how we're metabolizing, so how we're breaking down our estrogen, our progesterone, our testosterone, and it gives us a great information we can use to then improve symptoms and how they feel. So if this episode has resonated with you, if you've recognized yourself in some of the symptoms I've talked about today, and if you think, oh, I'd like to do the Dutch test, check out my website. I'm going to link to it in the show notes. I've got a one-to-one Dutch testing package that would be ideal for you if you think you want to go through the Dutch kind of investigation, because it is a wonderful test if somebody has the budget for it. So I'll put the link in the show notes to that. If you would like some deeper, more ongoing membership-led guidance, the Midlife Thrive membership takes you through every one of the pillars that I talk about, from blood sugar balance, stress resilience, to sleep, movement, hormone metabolism, gut health. Is all there, designed to help you thrive through perimenopause and beyond. So thank you so much for listening today. If you enjoyed this episode, please do share it with a friend or someone you think might find it helpful, or leave a quick review or rating. That would really, really help me to get this podcast out to other women. It's the only way I can do that. So thank you for listening, and I will see you next time. Bye-bye. If you found this episode helpful, then please share it with anyone else who you think could benefit, and consider leaving a rating and a review, as this will help the podcast to reach and help more people. And if you need more guidance on your own health journey, you can grab my free guide, 6 Steps to Mastering Your Hormones in Your 40s, over at francescaliparotti.com, where you can sign up for your free copy, or you'll also find the link in the show notes.